kick off hour number two of the program. It's brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Check them out online at tvacreditunion.com. It's the official credit union of Three and Out. They got you covered. Anything a bank can do, they can handle it for you. Incredible, incredible customer service. I'm a member. Houston's a member. You should be too. TVAcreditunion.com or walk into over 30 branches right here in East Tennessee. Adam McClintock, Houston, said that as of this morning,
the professor,
2,184 athletes have entered the transfer portal for the 2022 cycle.
Mm-hmm.
1,023 are still without a destination.
Yep.
So 47%, roughly, who entered the portal are still just chilling in there. It's really comfy in the portal. You don't have to go to practice. Don't have to go to class. As long as you're going to go to a new school. A la, who's our running back that did that? Already forgotten.
Tyon Evans.
We've already forgotten you.
Tyon Evans. I like that guy for those games that he was in there.
Tyon Evans like, yeah, I just go to a new school every year. That way I don't have to go to class ever.
Kind of genius, really.
Hey, I saw our boy Justin, what did he change his hyphenate his name to?
William Smith, whatever it is. Really good with running back names, apparently.
He was on some of those developmental draft lists for the NFL.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
People starting to buy into the hype?
Guess so. I mean, if he's the lead dog here for 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. loading up on the Josh Heupel stat train, you know, everybody's pulling people away from the line of scrimmage to handle all that stuff to the outside and just boom, wrap the gut, 60-yard touchdown.
We actually did that a few times last year.
It was great.
Obviously, during the rain delays yesterday, they were kind of going through some old videos that they had on SEC Network to kill the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I did watch the Tennessee spring practice kind of recap video. I think it was like 30 minutes. I'd seen clips of it on Twitter. It was pretty good. I'm pretty impressed with Josh Heupel. When he talks, you can tell he's actually thinking and not saying something completely rehearsed. Like, I'm sure he has his talking points, but he actually sounds like a, you know, human being.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were so scarred by the Butch Jones talking that even when Jeremy Pruitt sounded
everything
like an idiot,
our program is and about we knew it the was pillow an idiot. And the mouth. You said what? We have sleep coaches.
Dude, I was at that presser.
I know you.
I started laughing. And then I realized, no, he's serious.
He's dead serious.
I'm like looking over at like Ryan Callahan and Brent Hubbs, and I'm like, Kaz! Oh wait,
he was serious.
They're just taking their notes.
That was real.
Like, what is going on? Is this SNL? It's ridiculous. Yeah, we have.
It worked though.
He said we have individual sleep coaches.
Right.
For each athlete.
And I remember thinking, that is so bogus. You do not have 85 sleep coaches unless you're the biggest moron of all time.
I think he just meant...
But he may have, and he was the biggest moron of all time.
He just meant some players had an individual sleep coach. But, yeah, still.
What are your thoughts on all these guys jumping into the portal? Is that guys who just want to get into a new situation, or is that guys fishing for NIL money and they've overstated their value? Is it a little column A, column B?
I think it's our quitter mentality these days. You know, like...
So you think the majority of it is, I'm not playing enough.
I'm not getting... No, not necessarily playing time. Just, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
And lots of people aren't happy. And really, if you ask yourself enough, am I happy, am I happy, am I happy, you can come up with reasons why you're not happy.
Right.
Right? It's an outlook thing. And so once they convince themselves that they're not happy, they go looking for it elsewhere because in today's game, you can just do that. In the past, it's, I'm not happy. Oh, okay, well, I better either work harder or quit completely. And people would just work harder. And some of that, I'm not saying moving around, like transferring is always a bad thing. Sometimes a kid isn't getting to play because they're not good enough and they need to transfer to a worse team so they can play more, and that's fine.
Right.
But I still think by making moving around as easy as it is now, it's going to foster some kids instead of sucking it up and trying to get better, it's going to foster some kids just looking for an easy way out. So they go in the portal, and then they realize there's not really, you know, the grass is always greener is an expression for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of that going on. It's Justin Williams Thomas, by the way.
Thomas.
Yeah, number 26, 6 foot, 210, Dallas, Georgia, East Paulding High School.
Thank you.
Can't wait to watch him. I mean, a lot of true freshmen make big impact in that position in the SEC. I'm hoping,
no, that's true.
Hoping he's one of those.
I'm not going to call it the easiest, but it's one of the easiest. Where if you're just raw talented, mm-hmm. you can get your touches and make people look stupid. The reason I asked you about that portal scenario is Lane Kiffin did an interview yesterday, or it was posted yesterday, with Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, I believe. Yeah.
Correct.
And he said, I thought this was pretty interesting, he said, if you're a good player at a school and you're making NIL money, why would you not enter the portal every single year? There's no cap.
100%.
It's open free agency. Some of these kids do have agents. If that was the NFL scenario, every agent is going to encourage every player of his to enter the portal every single year to raise their NIL money. He said Bryce Young was his example, and he said if Bryce Young had entered the portal after last year, after winning the Heisman, even if he wanted to come back to Alabama,
yeah,
he could go to Alabama and say, hey, I got offered $10 million to go here. I want to stay at Alabama. Can you give me $8 million to make this work? You know, assuming Alabama has a collective, which, duh.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just, it's fascinating. He says this is only going to get worse. He said, you know how everyone keeps saying, oh, it's not sustainable, it's not sustainable. Well, I do think the market will correct itself. He says this is absolutely sustainable. He's like, do you not understand that these big money boosters just want to have input? He's like, they come up with money for everything. They come up with money for new weight rooms, new facilities, new dorms, you know, stadium upgrades. They always, especially, he gave out kind of tiers. He didn't mention names, but he said, you know, there's these tiers in college football. And once you get into that top 8 to 15, like, programs, he's like, the resources are endless. They will not ever run out of money. The question he had was, you know, talking about a cap and then obviously contracts.
Yeah.
Does that need to be the next move, is essentially paid employees with contracts and clauses and everything like that?
Well, so, I mean, he's right about the transfer portal. We'll start there, or I'll start there. He did a good job of laying that out, by the way. It's basically like if an NFL player signed a contract, but in that contract it said, but every year you can enter free agency and just see what's available.
Yeah.
As long as you just fill out this form, and then you can still come back and play on this deal if you want to. Wouldn't every NFL player be like, yep, every year I'll fill out the form and see if I can get paid more just to see? I mean, it's possible that Bryce Young would look around and one school might offer him, let's say, $50,000 over the next year or whatever, and he's like, eh, that's not enough. Like, I'm already getting six figures at Bama. I'm just going to play one more year, go to the NFL. I like where I'm at. My team's really good. I don't want to, you know. But if he got offered, say, $5 million more,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, he could always make that hometown discount. That's what I call it, choice, that, you know, NFL guys do that all the time, right? I mean, there's a balance between making sure you stay successful and just taking the top dollar. Sometimes if they know it's their last free agent deal, they'll just, hey, I don't care. I'll go to Jacksonville. Give me all the money.
Right.
But
yeah.
Other times, if they're in the prime of their career, they might be like, eh, I'll stay in Green Bay because I think we'll win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm not making as much money, but I'm, you know, I've got an experienced quarterback. Like, if you're a receiver, I've got an experienced quarterback. He's got a good line. I like my coach. I've been here for five years.
My kids are in school here.
Exactly.
Whatever,
like, there's all these other factors, you know, which makes this almost even more interesting because, while some high school 18-year-olds in the world of college football have kids, they're not likely in school.
Well, they're not as tied down. Just
exactly.
As they'd be tied down in other ways, right? Well, I'm friends with guys on the team here. I do think this adds a big curveball into coaching dynamics that guys have never really had to to deal with in this way. Now, it's not that big of a difference, though, because every year, Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, Josh Heupel, any of these guys have new freshmen coming in.
Yeah.
And they have to assimilate them into the team culture. And some of those guys are 4 and 5 stars, and some of those guys aren't. And there's – so, I mean, these coaches, part of their job has always been handling guys that have been the best dude on their team their whole life.
Right.
And now they're not. Even the best guy at their position a lot of times.
They still – like, the task is still there, but now they have to go a different way.
Yeah, but
– it's not the de-recruit them, you know, beat them down. And
but when Caleb Williams is rolling into USC
– yeah.
And there's a – you know, there's some quarterbacks already sitting there, and he's like, hey, guys, you know, see if you can beat me. Like, that's different.
Oh, yes. And, I mean, Kiffin brought up pretty much everything that we've discussed on the show, but it was just – if you've got, I mean, quarterback A, right? He comes in, he's making $8 million. Kiffin's saying, now the boosters that are tied into those collectives, for them to get the return on their investment, hey, the coach really wanted this player, we paid $8 million to get this player, he has to play.
Mm-hmm.
So the coach is like, this is the guy I want, this is the guy I want. He doesn't win the job because the coach has to play the best players.
Yeah.
Kiffin says, now you're going to have what happened to me in Oakland – when Al Davis is saying, we have to play Jamarcus Russell, do it, or I'm firing you. And Kiffin's saying, he's not the best quarterback we have right now. He's a developmental project. I'm going to give us the best chance to win and play this guy. And Al Davis fired him with an overhead projector.
Was that in here?
Yeah.
Or is that? Oh, okay. I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Well, he just mentions, he's like, what happens when you don't listen to the boss, the owner?
No, I'm fixated on the overhead projector part.
You don't remember that press conference when Al Davis fired Lane Kiffin and had all these clear sheets on the overhead projector? We move on down to page 3. I mean, he just read the list of, like, he's a liar and a scumbag and a cheat. All this, I mean, it was sensational. He tells a story in here, Nate, of... like the way recruiting used to be. Like, if you worked really hard, if you built a great culture, if you put the time in for 3 years recruiting that prospect, it didn't matter if you were at Alabama or Ole Miss or Mississippi State. If you worked the hardest, you had a pretty good shot. He said, now, none of it matters.
He said 100% of the players are going where they can get the most NIL money, no matter what these coaches say.
Maybe not 100%, but I do think
he might have said almost 100, yeah.
But that's a huge part of it. He said he recruited a dude for 2 years. The kid ended up going to a school where he had never spoken to the head coach, never visited the school, never spoke to the head coach. He spoke to an assistant and the collective and picked that school. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it more like the NFL model. Like, I'm sitting here in the green room, I get drafted. Hey, coach. I mean, he may have talked to him before, like at the combine or something, but
seriously, yeah. I mean, the NFL model, basically, the higher you get picked, the more you get paid.
Sure.
And the more in the fantasy football world, we call it draft equity. The more Jahan Dotson, for example, went in the first round, 16th pick to the Washington Commanders. Some people thought that was a little bit of a reach. He was more of a second or third round guy. Velus Jones is a third rounder to the Chicago Bears. Well, when they start training camp, the Washington coaches and ownership and whatever are going to expect Dotson and going to give him more opportunities to win the starting job than they are a third-round guy because they invested that first-round pick. It's like the Jamarcus Russell thing. And that player, if they do well, is going to be ready for an extension and earlier. So you want to go as early as possible. That's kind of like the kid just picking the team based on NIL.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to commit now. I don't need to see the campus. I don't need to talk to the coach. I'm just going to take this because it's the biggest offer I've got, and I'm taking it right now. I'm jumping on it.
This is fascinating. We'll get to stay on it and tell you more what Lane Kiffin said. Makes a lot of sense. And there's a lot of stuff that's going to, you know, really impact the landscape of college football and, of course, your Tennessee Volunteers. Lane Kiffin with Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. I just enjoy that some coaches are so willing to be transparent. And
yeah, Lane never really had that problem.
Yeah, well, a lot of coaches, who have worked their way up through the system and gotten a big job. And I mean, they weren't born on third base like Lane Kiffin, so they have a lot more to risk, I feel like, if they were to open up. And I mean, Lane was just the son of Monty, and like, I mean, he's Lane Kiffin. Like, as if he flamed out everywhere he went, some NFL team would probably still make him the last assistant on the coaching staff, you know?
Like Derek Dooley?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's, I understand why he's able to do that more than some other guys, but still refreshing. He said, Lane Kiffin stated, I've said from the beginning players should get paid. They do the work. Why that should be limited to a scholarship check, I disagree with. And they shouldn't be paid all equal. That's not what happens in the real world. Why does their best player get paid the same as the worst player? That's not real life. There's just not a system.
Is that a shot at Saban? Because didn't Saban say that? Like, we're going to pool all the NIL money and everyone's going to get the same?
Maybe, yeah. There's just not a system. It was okay. Open it up. No system behind it. I'm sure some people saw these things coming and a lot of people didn't. These collectives, you basically made what was cheating before legal. You had no rules behind it. You created something that was going to have a ton of issues. To think these things weren't going to go this direction once you allowed boosters to do whatever they wanted, you know. He just kind of cut off after that. He was asked, how much is NIL money determining where a recruit attends school? You take a 17-year-old who, a lot of them, don't come from money, and family doesn't come from money. If any person tells you that their NIL is not the number one thing, take 100 of them and ask about the number one thing that's going to make the decision. It's not the size of the stadium, not the head coach, not the campus. The number one thing will be money. And how would you blame them? A professional player already has money, and they usually follow the money in free agency. So when you don't have it and are 3 or 4 years away from getting money in the NFL, you take what is guaranteed. How can you blame them when a lot of them never make it to the NFL? How do you not take it? Makes sense.
No, of course.
He says, totally change recruiting. I joke all the time about it, facilities and all that. Go ahead and build the facilities and these great weight rooms and training rooms, but you aren't going to have any good players in them if you don't have NIL money. I don't care who the coach is or how hard you recruit. That is not going to win over money.
He's not wrong. So what's he saying? There needs to be a cap. We agree with some sort of a cap. And then what about schools who can't even get close to that cap number?
Yeah, I want to think through that a little bit, because if you cap the... like a cap for the whole team or per player? If you cap,
I think it's per player, per position, basically.
If you just cap per player, though, doesn't that just mean that, I mean, those teams are still just going to be better. They're just going to be paying their punter, who will be the best punter in the nation, you know, because they can't pay everybody else.
He says that at the end. He's like, this way and even the future way, it's just going to make the best even better.
Yeah, he said NIL helped Nick Saban win more championships. Mm-hmm. Don't know why he's complaining about it.
Because if you equal the cap, let's say the, I don't know what the cap would be for an individual roster or individual position, but the total ends up being, in a given year, $15 million. How many schools can afford $15 million a year in the NIL? And then anyone who can't, like, there's your gap. There's your separator, right?
Uh-huh.
So all the rich schools, the successful schools, the big-time Power Five, you know, ballers, they're just going to get better. Now, there's going to be outliers. The guy who grew up in Boise, Idaho, who's always wanted to go be a Bronco, who's a, you know, top 100-ish player, like, he might say, you know what, I'm a Bronco, I'm going there. But a lot of them, it's going to be money. Mm-hmm. Give me money. Oh, I'm going to have to take less to go to this school. I really like the coach, really like the facilities. Who's going to... $100,000 pay cut to go there? No, they're not going to do that. Mm-mm. And they shouldn't do that. So that's what it's going to, like, that's going to be recruiting now. Like, if you're on that, like, fringe 4 to 3 star, it's like,
couldn't the cap
do you
hurt?
Have an offer for me? No, sorry.
Couldn't the cap hurt a team like Ole Miss, though? What if Lane Kiffin's like, look, I know our line's not going to be as good because we can't pay every guy across the board as much. Let's just put all our money in getting the best quarterback. So Alabama is in on the number one guy. You know, Alabama said they'll pay him $6 million over 3 years. Let's just, I know we only have $8 million left, but $6.5 million of that outbid Alabama for that kid. Because if I got the best quarterback, I know our line won't be as good, but I'll have a shot to at least compete.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if he's saying there has to be a cap for everybody or if it's going to be position-based. Because he said, like, quarterback should obviously get paid more than tight end. So is he saying, like, a personal cap or just a roster cap?
What about a you could do this within a conference. What about a luxury tax?
I mean, yeah, you could. Basically, just Major League Baseball?
Basically, you know, dollars that one team wants to go over the cap get thrown into a pot that then gets distributed to the teams that are below the cap.
Mm-hmm.
But that money has to be spent on players. You can't go to, you know, Vanderbilt's new academic wing or something.
Right. Well, then he brings up also, and you've brought this up before, you know, the idea in the NFL is you win the Super Bowl, you draft last in the first round.
Right.
He said, under this current format, you win the national championship, you're drafting first.
And
you might be drafting 1 through 6 if you've got the money. Like, you might go get the top 6 players in the country at their position. And
it's always been that, though.
No, college football's always been that. Like, the best team, you
has
know,
the best weight room, basically. But,
well, and the best team is just going to typically get, you know, I mean, they may not have the best class every year, but, you know, Alabama, since Nick Saban's been there, has had a top five class every year. And then they win a national championship, and boom, they're back up to number one. Lose a national championship, Jimbo gets them by a spot, but they're still right there at 2. He also said coaches now are going to make their decision on where they coach based on collective.
Oh, he said he was talking to one coach at a lower level who was complaining about having to re-recruit a guy who's in the portal, and he's like, "Wait, you don't have to pay him?" And he's like, "No, we don't have any NIL money at our level." And he's like, "Well, that's at least you just get to recruit kind of fairly, you know."
Yeah, he talked about the purity of the game.
You're just selling, you know. You're not.
Well, that's kind of my thing. It's like, look, Saban, if you hate it so much, if it's ruining college football, then just drop down to a level where there's no NIL, Mister. I love the game so much.
Yeah, go to West Virginia.
Oh, wait, you won't do that because you won't make as much money. Oh, the same thing the kids are doing. Yeah,
go to West Virginia, coach high school. You got enough money.
What if he did drop down to a lower level?
I'd like probably D2? Have some respect for him.
And come into and turn into the D2 version of himself.
North Dakota State.
Like Mount Union. Like kids on the team that had never lost a game in 4 years.
Yeah, Kiffin ends the – I'm not saying we have to be done with this topic, but he says, people always ask me when Nick Saban will retire. Before, I used to say, not for a long time. He's very well-driven and works like he's 30. Now, it'll be never. Why would he? You get the best players – have free agency to pluck the best players. He'll be there forever. He might double his championships. Way to go, Hickman. Team Saban over there.
I never claimed to be on Team Saban.
I think you kind of did.
I just was anti-Jimbo, which is understandable.
Jimbo missed a golden opportunity to advertise his collective. He should have said, we did it. Here's the website. Go read all about it, recruits. This is the time to sign up with Texas A&M.
He may not be allowed to because some state laws have a very weird, you know, verbiage about the relationship between school and collective. And you wouldn't want to maybe open up the NCAA attack dogs quite that much, especially if you think maybe you did skirt some rules in this situation.
They're changing. All right, we'll come back with more. I want to hear from you. I got some tweets to get into, and you can give us a shout on the phone lines, 865-546-8200. Come back with more. 3 and Out next. Hour 2 continues, live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Pick up some White Claw Hard Seltzer, made pure. Back to kind of the portal question for a second. Andy made a good point, said a coach does not have to keep a scholarship open for a player that enters the portal, correct? They can't always come back. I know there's certain deadlines with how that works. So I don't know if the kid enters the portal at first and there's certain deadlines, like if that scholarship has to be kept open or if they can use it immediately once they go in the portal, or it's only if they pass the deadline with the portal. Every scholarship's technically a one-year renewable, so, I mean, you could always just kind of process
the I have the answer here if you want it.
Fire away.
Schools are allowed to cancel or reduce a student's scholarship as early as the next term after a student-athlete enters the transfer portal. Unfortunately, some of those students who enter the transfer portal and then change their mind at a later date may have lost their scholarship and or roster spot by the time they finalize their decisions.
Okay, so that's what those deadlines are, is that the term's ending. So they can't enter the portal. I mean, a smart player and his agent would know exactly when to enter the portal and then when to make their decision by, so they don't lose their scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
Now the coach could still just get mad at you and bump, but down the playing time thing. But this just all goes back to how good's the player. If you're a really good player, it's not going to matter. I also think if you're really, I would just be pretty straight up with the coach. I mean, hey, coach, love you, but it's just in my best interest to go into the portal every year and just see what's out there, you know. And I'll keep you up to date on how things are tracking. Don't want to leave you in the lurch, but sorry. This is just the way it is now.
A little bit of a breaking news update. A&M Florida will not start at 9:30.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Call me shocked. All right, to the phone lines, we'll go 865-546-8200. We've got T-Carp up first. What's up, T? You're on Three and Out.
Hey, guys. I hope y'all are doing well. Sorry I haven't talked to you in a long, long time. Still love y'all. Still listen all the time.
Shouts out, buddy.
Yeah, man. It seems to me Nick Saban is one of those coaches that doesn't realize that, like, where the money comes from and that, like, he seems to be this coach, but doesn't understand anything else about the game other than coaching, or at least acts like he doesn't. You know what I mean? He doesn't really, you know, he hates the fans, he hates the media coverage and all that. And I'm like, buddy, where do you think this money comes from? So, and specifically now he's talking all about, oh, we don't need to pay the players and all that. The more and more I actually listen to what he says, I really disdain the guy. Am I crazy for thinking that, for disdaining Nick Saban?
No, here's where I think he's coming from. T-Carp, typically in college football for years, right? It was the guy who worked the hardest, and I think Nick Saban worked really hard. The guy who coached the best, the guy who won the most, they were the ones who then reaped the rewards of their work. And now you have people buying success in his eyes. And he doesn't like that because he's thinking, wait a minute, people don't have to work nearly as hard as me, and now they're going to get better players than me. That doesn't make sense in his brain. The way he was raised was, I have to work the hardest possible to make sure that I get, you know, what is going to come my way. And it's worked for him, and now that's potentially hanging in the balance with dudes just throwing money at kids. And so he's kind of, I think it's an internal struggle for him that he's making public, because he's either trying to stop or, you know, maybe kickstart the NCAA and, frankly, for that matter, the federal government into some type of rule system that will still let him keep his advantage, while also simultaneously, if I had to guess, trying to raise that money for Alabama on the side in case he does have to start doing it that way.
I feel like whenever he's not had that advantage, he's a mediocre coach. I mean, not a mediocre coach. He's a good coach, but he is not the end-all be-all. When he has had equal stuff, he's been just about as good as anybody else. But when you've got all the talent in the world at Alabama, I mean, a lot of people can do a lot of things with superior talent. And so I do agree with what Jimbo said, is like, man, it's really easy to say this coming from everything you've had.
Yeah.
So I just to play devil's advocate with you, he's worked hard, but it's not, I don't say he's worked the hardest. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's no way to really know, but I do think that he...
Right.
just his mentality and the way he's driven. Like, there are ways to beat him, but I don't know that you're going to outwork him.
Yeah, you can work as much, but you're not going to...
And if he loses that way, I think he's okay with it. You know, the way he was talking about how Kirby did a great job. And I mean, no, he didn't like losing, but I think he thought, okay, I trained that guy. He did it the exact same way I did it, and he beat me straight up. Now I've got to go work about, you know, I've got to be a better coach. I've got to get better players. Meanwhile, Jimbo, who did beat him on the field, is just saying, well, here's $15 million. Go get me the best players.
Well, and I think from Nick Saban's kind of his theme, too, is that he holds his players and coaches more accountable than anyone else does in college football. He says, this is the standard, meet the standard, or else. And because of that, he ends up getting players that are mostly bought into that system. Like, he gets players that are so bought into the process that sometimes they go to the NFL and they can't even function. Like, they're just, like, socially inept. Because you ask Greg McElroy, what was the difference when Nick Saban came in? He said, everything. Like, there's just, your recruiting takes on the personality of the head coach eventually and the culture that you build there. And when they're really good, they have a bunch of kids on that team that all they do is work on football. Just the way that, and that's what they do.
I mean, there have been articles anonymously that kind of accuse them of brainwashing.
Yeah.
Like, warping the mind into that sense of, I have to do this for
Jim Calhoun at UConn basically said the same thing about his basketball team. He said, we schedule every minute of their day.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is just, he said a big part of their success and culture building with UConn basketball was to schedule the guys to hang out together on the team.
Yeah.
And not allow other people to be there. Because that's when they get in trouble. It's when they have to hang out with the other scuzzy students that are just trying to get close to the basketball team.
Yeah.
He's like, we insulate them on purpose from people that will get them in trouble. And they become this supremely tight-knit group that will do anything for each other on and off the court. And when we've selected the right players and they're all good dudes, and you know, then it's perfect. But basically, it's the same thing. It's like, just craft every part of their existence in college.
And that works. That works when it works. And that's okay. That has seemingly worked the past decade. But there's little instances where you see the cracks. You see the cracks and flaws in it. You know, when you had Dabo down at Clemson, you know, playing fun and loose and all that stuff. And then you have these other teams that are coming in, they're playing fun and loose and realizing it's a game. And then you have this, you know, the NIL stuff where it does bring better players to teams. And I feel like you can equally see which team does better or worse. So I'm just against that philosophy, in my opinion. I think you got to realize that it is a game. I just don't agree with the whole, like you said, Houston, where he's been accused of brainwashing. I don't agree with that philosophy of coaching. But again, the next game I coach will be my first. So y'all be good and have a good one. Love y'all.
Thanks for the call.
It's worked for him, so he's not going to want to change. But I mean, there
are a lot of other guys are winning with.
Oh yeah,
without being strict, I guess.
Dabo was a great example of that. I mean, I told you about that special I watched on Josh Heupel in spring football and talking about how they, you know, they schedule a lot of team events or position group events because they want their guys to know each other, to love each other, and to trust each other. Like, I definitely don't have a problem with that. You know, we kind of joked about, oh, they're playing dodgeball today or wiffle ball today. Those are good things. Those are fun things that bring your team together. Like, you can, I don't think there's any, you know, 10-page manual on if you do all of these things, you will win a national championship. Like, everybody's just a little bit different. And you attract players that align more with your personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like what Tony V says about his team. I want gentlemen in street clothes, and I want monsters on the field. Because that's what he is. You get him out there, he's chest bumping guys, he's dropping F-bombs, he's, you know, he's ripping his hat off, he's going crazy. Then, you know, around town or in a social setting, he's, you know, he's a happy-go-lucky guy who enjoys what he does and can talk eloquently about it. So Yeah, like Nick Saban, he recruits the type of players who come in and say, I'm not here to have fun. I'm not here to joke around. I'm here to get better at football. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not, they don't have friends on Alabama's team. They certainly do. But it just depends on a coach's style. And obviously, it has worked for him. But again, T-Carp not liking that is fine. That if he ran a team and ran it differently, doesn't mean he wouldn't have success. That's just the way Nick Saban was raised. It's the way he's always done it, and it's gotten him to the pinnacle of college football for a decade and a half now, essentially. Like, he's been right in there, right in the mix. And he doesn't want to change that. He doesn't want to have to adapt. And also, too, I get the idea, and obviously there are rumors, and Jimbo says it's not true, and Saban says it is true. Like, if you're just out there throwing money at the top 25 kids every year and getting them, that's not a very good job of building your team. Like, there needs to be at least some level of, does this guy fit our culture? Is he a good player? Is he going to help the team? Is he going to gel with his teammates? Like, there has to be a level of that. And if you're just out, you know, signing 25 random guys without taking into account, like, this is our culture, does he make sense? I think that's going to blow up, and you're going to have a lot of guys enter the portal and leave your university, and you're going to look like a big idiot because why did you bring in these five guys when they didn't fit what you were trying to do? Oh, we just threw money at them because they were five stars. That didn't make sense. But then those same five players could go to five different schools, and they all have great success because it makes a better fit for them and for that university. Again, it's not just give me the best players and you're guaranteed a championship. We see that in the NFL all the time. The most talented team does not always win, you know, a playoff game or a Super Bowl. I mean, that undefeated Patriots team, as much as it pains me to say it, they were the Giants were not better than that Patriots team. That's like one of the best.
Had to go there.
I'm just saying that's one of the best teams I've ever seen. I'm not saying that was necessarily a culture issue with New England, but I mean it's a sport, it's a game. On any given night, things happen.
That was the football equivalent of this Tennessee baseball team.
Don't say that. That now you've put it into the universe that we're going to get to the end and blow it.
No.
Okay.
That's
the good thing about baseball is it's, you know, it'll be double elimination by the time you get to
that
point.
If there was a series to be played for the Super Bowl, I'm pretty sure the Patriots would
have bounced back. Nine out of ten. But as Coach O'Shea said in Little Giants, there's always that one time. Mm. And sometimes it's the first time.
I wish the Manning family would just... there should be like 9 or 10 Super Bowls for Brady.
Oh my God! Yeah, he had enough.
Archie just had to have sex.
Final segment, hour two next.
In shot. Frank. Sit down. Frank. Stand up. Frank. Pass out. Frank. Wake up. Frank. Fade it. Frank. Fade it.
Nah, I done grew around some people living their life in bottles. Granddaddy had the golden flats, backstroke every day in Chicago. Some people like
final segment, hour number two. Want to kill their sorrow. Some people want to fit in with the popular. You got some good weather updates over there, Chris?
Looks like it might be clearing up around 2-3 o'clock local. So 3-4 o'clock here. Light rain though.
We might get the late game.
Light rain starting at 11.
Hopefully not too late, you know?
The question then becomes lightning. Because no rain and lightning will still delay the game.
True. Lightning's the worst.
Our approximate start time was 2 Eastern. And now...
I would love us to have the, like, a
4 o'clock, 5 o'clock.
I mean, I'd be fine with like 7 or 8
o'clock. The only thing that worries me is these guys have been sitting around
all day
for two days. They did practice yesterday in the rain, which they can't play in the rain, but apparently they can go practice in the rain. They're just, I don't want them to get too stir crazy.
I kind of like the fact that we've been sitting around. I feel like they're going to be ready to go.
Well, rest helps pitchers, it hurts hitters. You lose your groove. You lose your swing. I'm glad they went and practiced yesterday. I think that's a really good thing. At least took some BP.
When we had the delay for the first game of the Super Regional against LSU, we kind of got off to a slow start and then kind of came out firing after that.
That's true.
With this team,
it also helped that the rain stopped.
I feel like this team, like once they get going, you don't want to interrupt what's going on.
Like a fifth inning stoppage.
Yeah, I don't think they could. I feel like this team gets so jacked up for big games that if they have to all of a sudden stop for a couple hours,
yeah, it's hard to restart. Yeah.
So I'm not really concerned about us coming out flat. Just as long as we play the game and we play it all the way through when we actually play it, I feel like we'll be fine.
I'd agree with that. Once the game starts, the worst thing for us is a stoppage. We saw that in the Kentucky series. Like that's just not the way we play. And I'd really like it if the sun would come out and it wouldn't be just so, you know, nasty.
That'd be nice.
I'm just sure these guys are kind of champing at the bit. I mean, they haven't played since Saturday.
No kidding.
It's Thursday. That's not normal because we didn't take a week off for a midweek series like a lot of these teams did, especially late in the year. Mm-hmm. Our routine is play Saturday or Sunday and then play Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's our routine. And then we're back at it on Thursday or Friday. So this is – and again, the rest is not necessarily a bad thing. They said Jared Dickey's a 50-50 on whether or not he's going to play in Hoover, but he'll be ready to go for the regional and the super regional.
Oh, wow.
So that's good.
Yeah.
If you were worried about pitching and arms and – you know, maybe a little bit of fatigue there, another couple of days for everybody to, you know, find the groove, especially Blade, who's going to be, I think, he said he could still change his mind, but he was looking like Blade's going to get the first ball tonight. Mm. Obviously, if that were to happen, like, I guess not much changes for the weekend. You just, instead of having your day off between two games, you're just going to go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, assuming you make it to Sunday.
I mean, a truncated kind of tournament that's so tight together might actually help Tennessee, depending on the pitching, you know, because like other teams could run out. But it almost also might help other teams, you know, if there's not as many innings to win the tournament. They got a seven-inning single elimination. I mean,
anything can happen.
Team might have a starter just go all seven, right? And then
sure.
And
oh yeah, absolutely.
We might have to face the team's closer for like half a game, you know. And as if it was nine inning games and double elimination, our depth would be better. I'm not too worried about that though, because I mean this isn't the ultimate tournament. It's not the last one. It's not that big of a deal. So, you know, just have to see how it plays out. It might be good for the team to have to go through some of this just in preparation for like what Tony V's been talking about, where it's, you know, you have to be kind of ready to play at any time. You know, I mean, that's kind of the way it works in regionals. You know, you might lose and have to play more. You might win and have to wait while the other team kind of gets hot and stays in a rhythm. Nice to have a trial run, you know, through the SEC tournament. May not be the worst thing in the world. I'd enjoy a night game though tonight. I know we're slated for 2:00 right now. That ain't happening. But if it's at 5,
highly unlikely.
If it's at 5, 6, 7 Eastern, it'd be great. If it's 8, 9 Eastern, okay.
I mean, that's kind of what we're used to on Thursday nighters.
But yeah, I mean, if it's 10:45. That'll be tough. At least it's Thursday, not Monday.
It's a good point.
We'll suffer through.
Do we get a game in tonight?
It sounds like it. I mean,
it may be a lot later than we wanted.
If they're willing to, if there's no issues with the field needing to, like, you know, have time to dry at all, I mean, surely not, right?
I don't know. How's the drainage in Hoover?
I mean, they can rip up that. Like, who cares if the players rip up the outfit a little bit playing this tournament? Like, they'll have,
well, as long as it's not a just slip and fall and hurt yourself bad. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I'm guilty of this. Like, I just have flashbacks to 2015 when Neyland's Field was an absolute joke.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been 16. I mean, where guys are stopping to cut and just sliding, and you're watching the sod get pulled up. I mean, this is a field that should not have any issues like that.
Yeah, Kamara kind of just jogged like into the end zone, I think,
And yeah, and then stops like, in the end zone and he just slips and falls.
Gradually stops. Like it was, yeah, it wasn't even bad. And it's just, that's crazy.
But no, I shouldn't be as worried about the field as I am. I'm just battered as a Vol fan because I watched it happen and it took like four of our players out that season.
Makes sense. Should be fine, though. We'll come back with more. We'll kick off hour three. Stick with us right here on 3 and Out.
You're listening to 3 and Out